And now, with your host and connection to spirit, Leo Bonomo.
Hi, very warm welcome to you, and we've got a wonderful show for you tonight. So wherever you happen to be in the world, whether it's morning, afternoon, evening or night, a very warm welcome. We have a favorite lady of mine on tonight, Sarah Tyler Walters. We've known each other, I think, now about 12 years. She's an excellent trance medium, and she's been teaching at the College of Psychic Studies for, I guess, most of that time, if not longer. Sarah, have you?
Longer.
Yeah, I had a feeling it was.
And yeah, because I was trying to remember today how long you and I have known each other, and I knew it was over a decade, but you're right, probably 12 or more years. But I've been at the college since 2004 as a consultant and 6 as a teacher, so long time.
And it's something to be very, very proud of course, because you know, to have that standard and be taken on as a consultant really says something. We've had Master Chow around when I was teaching at South Woodford Church, and also at home when I moved, and that. And you're always very popular, and Master Chow is often entertaining, certainly informative. He has his moments, as we both know.
He does indeed. He can be naughty.
And I think one of the things that really tends to test him is people asking questions like, am I going to win the lottery, and those kind of things, which, to be honest, would annoy me and do annoy me as well. So if anyone's got any questions out there, what we're doing tonight, as we did in the last show, we're doing the first hour with Sarah, so you can get used to her and how she is, I was going to say normal life. I don't think we live normal lives, do we?
No, definitely not a normal life. But so they can hear what I sound like as opposed to what Chow sounds like.
Absolutely. So if you've got questions, and we've already got some questions coming in, whether you're developing, whether there's circle, you have the chance, if you want to, and I highly recommend it, to ask Sarah the questions, and then we'll get Master Chow's that kind of perspective. But if you have a preference, Sarah or Master Chow, whichever way round, it's fine.
We don't always give the same answers.
That's the thing. I mean, this is what I find out about trance, and I'm sure you've had this experience, because it depends how, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, how deep you go and how the connection is. Because if you've got someone that has got very strong views, and sometimes, you know, they're... how can I say this? Maybe bordering on racism, or you've got particular hues that you've grown up with. And if you're completely in trance, well under, the guide will often have different views. But if you're not, sometimes those nuances come out, don't they?
Well, it's not to do with the level of altered state. That's a misconception. It's to do with the spirit themselves and whether or not they are a soul in reflection. So they are actually just that soul and the lifetime that they're talking about. So when you're talking about those sorts of cultural biases, you may very well be connecting to the soul that's still in reflection. It hasn't gone back into its higher self, into its full spirit being, so therefore doesn't have the rounded understanding of many lifetimes, only the singular lifetime. So Chow, as a spirit being, steps forward with all his lifetimes as a compass and as a barometer and a knowledge base and a perspective. But there are quite a lot of spirits who step forward to communicate, who are souls in reflection. And then their knowledge is limited to that one lifetime.
Yeah, that makes complete sense because, you know, I mean, there is another misconception, isn't there, that when we get over, everything changes, we're completely angelic.
Yeah, no, once you go into reflection, it's down to you and to what you believed and to how willing you are to let go of being human, let go of the power, the persona, and everything you had. What did you believe you were going to experience when you crossed? All of that comes into play. So there are souls that cross and go, this is fantastic, I'm so pleased to be here, let's just understand what we've done, and they go right the way through reflections relatively quickly, happy as Larry. And there are others that are there hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years later because they don't want to let go.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of spirits who work tirelessly to help all the souls in reflection pass through that stage as easily and as comfortably for them as physically, that's the wrong term, you know what I mean.
Yeah. That's physically possible.
It is. It's not the right, it's the wrong way around, but you know what I mean. I mean, they do a lot of work to help people step out of purgatory if they've put themselves in it, help them to let go of the idea that they're in a physical body. And that's why, as a mental medium, you'll know that getting a person's name can be really difficult. Because that is a real link to who you were as a human being. Mm. So it's often one of the threads that kind of almost gets severed as quickly as possible, because that's such a weighted anchor to this human life.
Yeah, I can see that. It's just, I don't give names very rarely. I rarely get them. And it's something that I think if you're giving evidence, then that stands up for itself without names.
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, I remember when I started, because I started as a platform mental medium. Mm. And I remember once all spirit said to me is look for the bee. Mm. And I'm thinking, what, bumblebee? What do they mean, look for the bee? And sure enough, front row, there was a lady with a beautiful brooch, and it was the letter B for Bertie, and it was for her. So they have ways of connecting without a name.
Yeah,
you just have to really pay attention to all of the information that's coming through, and spirit are endlessly creative with it.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one thing, although, again, as a mental medium, you're in an altered state, but it's one thing that really amazes me. I mean, it just keeps it fresh how they come up with ways. And that's a good thing. Not that it would ever be boring, but if you've got to say, it's a bit like learning the 2x table, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know the rhythm. I never could remember the words. but you can get into a rhythm like that with your mediumship. And I feel that in itself is a burden if you're just running through that process.
Yeah, absolutely. You can get complacent. Or it's a bit like colouring by numbers.
Yeah.
I remember I was in a spiritualist church in I think it was Camden, it was Rochester Square, which sadly isn't a church anymore. And there was a lovely medium, and he stood there and he was really direct with the congregation. And it was, I work in a very particular way. They will give me a piece of information that only one person in the audience can take. And you're sort of sitting there as an audience member going, okay, that's a big statement. Now, how's that going to work? You know. And he then very calmly said, okay, so who was watching Dan Dare?
Oh.
And I had to very embarrassingly stick my hand up because it was me. I had indeed been watching a Dan Dare cartoon that morning. And that was how he made the link. And he did that for every person he connected to in the congregation. And I thought, gosh, that's such an interesting, unique way of spirit and him. He obviously must have driven it in some way that he needed a real solid connection before he would do anything.
Yeah.
And there it was, this beautiful relationship between spirit and him, where he had absolute confidence in that opening piece of information. And from then on, he knew he had the link. He didn't second guess himself or the information, and he just delivered really great evidence. And I thought that it was really wonderful to watch, and I've never seen anyone else do it exactly like that.
Yeah, and I think it's wonderful as well. You know, I kind of hate the scattergun approach, you know. Got name John, surname Smith, all that kind of thing. I'm over there somewhere. I can't see why that's still prevalent today, because there are, well, I call them tricks, but there are simple tricks. You know, you can say to spirit, as that gentleman must have done, this is what I want. Nothing ambiguous. Give me that. And, you know, if I say, I'm sure Master Chow will have a different opinion, but if I say that we are completely in charge from the way that we work, this is what I want, this is what I won't accept, this is how I want to do it, then we can improve ourselves. You know,
I think we are to a degree, but it is a work in progress, because also you have to be careful your own ego doesn't come in.
Yeah.
But I also think it's about how mediums are trained, because if you only ever learn by sitting in front of a person, then you're only learning about how to give information specifically. If you don't train in front of a room full of people in platform style, you don't learn the skill of, okay, spirit, how do we narrow this down?
Exactly.
So I think actually the training sometimes cultivates this kind of connection. You know, I mean, when I was starting out, everybody did open platform. You went out as a fledgling. You went to a church where you didn't know anyone, and you got up on their fledgling night or afternoon, and you delivered to a room full of people. And therefore, you had to learn how to know, where is my link? Who am I going to? How do you deal with two people sat directly in front of each other, and you want the person behind, but you actually can't see them? So you have to work through the person in front. Those are logistical things that you can only learn, you and spirit, in a room with lots of people staring at you. When you're a student in a circle, you're paired up. And then you're just focused on that one person in front of you. And it's like, it's got to be for them, because that's the person that's there.
Yeah, absolutely. No pun intended, but you have to do these things live. And it is kind of trial by fire. But but that's how you learn, isn't it? You know, the great comedians, I'm sure, had real problems, you know, and they eked out what was working and what wasn't.
Well, you always hear the big stand-up comedians say that they start their material in gigs to work out what works and what doesn't work before they go and do an arena tour. It's the same thing. You have to work at the craft. You have to hone your skills. And there's nothing like a spiritualist congregation for helping you to hone your skills.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, although it is helpful in a roundabout way, sometimes obviously there are mediums in the audience and they want specific things, and they should know better. But they can be very hard on anybody that's new, whether they're fledglings or not, to the church. Again, you know, it's the craft work, isn't it? It's knowing how to handle difficult people and to, you know, work out. If I say compromise, I don't mean compromising that there's a lacking of quality, but you learn how to I suppose work in the room.
It's the give and take of it. And I think also, you know, I was fortunate enough that I did school theatre clubs, drama clubs. I was a member of a theatre company. I did all sorts of things evolved around the stage when I was a kid. So you learn stagecraft.
Yeah.
And that's how to speak to an audience, how to focus on the whole room, how to project your voice to the back of the room, how to do what you need to do and not be overwhelmed by the fact that there's all these people staring at you. Mm-hmm. And actually, stagecraft is a brilliant skill set for mediums. because you do learn how to deliver, how to work a room, but in the right way, not the, you know, the way sadly some people do with cold reading and that kind of thing. But how to actually be engaging with the whole room, how to include everybody, how to deal with the person who starts coughing, or my favourite in spiritualist churches is the dog that starts drinking from the bowl. That was always my favourite, and the bowl invariably sliding around the floor.
You
know, with the dog chasing it, you know. And if you can do that, then sitting one-to-one in a room with someone is a piece of cake. You know, it's sad that less and less students want to go into the churches.
I think so. And I think some of it, unfortunately, I think is where you get the local mediums and they kind of see it as their patch. And so there's that kind of rivalry of, well, actually, you've hit the nail on the button, but on the head, but I'm not going to admit it. And, you know, they make things difficult.
Well, you know, we are human and we are flawed and we do all have an ego. And however much work you do on yourself, you can still get a little bit territorial and a little bit competitive, and it can slip,
can't you?
You can. We're human, and I think also the audience, your customers, also sometimes forget that we're human and we're not machines, and we can't just turn it on and just deliver and it always be exactly the same quality, always be exactly the same set of stuff, because we can have a bad day, we can have an off day, we can, you know, actually just not be in the mood. You know, people who go to work and do 9 to 5 in an office block will often talk about, you know, how bored they are and how they can't engage with their work and they enjoy their tea breaks and don't want to go back after lunch break. But they never, ever apply that same rule to us.
Yeah, people sometimes put mediums on pedestals, don't they? They know everything.
And they can do everything. And why can't you do that? And my favourite one, I got called up by a reporter for a big TV channel. And this was within a week or so of the Queen Mother passing away. And genuinely asked me, well, can you bring her through? Is that... Do you want to run that question by me again? Well, yeah, can you bring the Queen Mother through? We want to put it on camera. And I just burst out laughing. And this poor woman on the other end, because she was deadly serious, could not actually understand why I was laughing. But it was, seriously, that's a serious question. She said, well, yeah, I've got this man telling me he can do it. And I said, well, look, if he's telling you he can do it, you go for it. But I can tell you professionally, that's a load of rubbish. She's only been passed 7 days, bless her heart, you know. As a professional medium, we tell people wait at least 6 months to a year. There is a reason for that. The person who has passed needs some time to adjust. So 7 days after she's passed, unless she absolutely believed in this or was a professional medium herself, would be extraordinary. And to come through to some unknown person for a TV program, not her own family member, highly unlikely.
But absolutely. I tell people that all the time, you know, because people say, oh, you know, I've got this this medium and he talks to Elvis. And it's like, you know, there's got to be either a personal connection with him or the sitter. And they go, no, he just turns up for a chat.
I have to say, when you start getting into my neck of the woods, when you start getting into trance, I have brought through Elvis. Sorry, I have. He just came just for once, just for a class, because sometimes spirit want to have fun. And bringing through different types of energies is really useful for students because they get very caught up in an idea of what spirit are supposed to be like and how profound they're supposed to talk. So sometimes I do throw them a curveball and go, we're going to bring through dead celebrities and see who turns up. And yeah, on one night I did bring through Elvis and he was all hips and it was great fun. But I definitely don't talk to him again, and I certainly wouldn't be bothering him anymore. As far as I'm concerned, he's in spirit. He did me a solid. It was a favor to come and entertain my students. I hope he got something out of it. Yeah. But he should be resting in peace now.
Well, absolutely, because I mean, you know, if we take Elvis as an extreme example, I mean, you know, they do say everybody knows where they were when he died. He had that profound effect. And if you've got, for argument's sake, 2 billion people calling on him, waiting on him, it's thank God I'll never know what that's like in spirit. But I mean, it must really pull you down.
Well, it stops you from evolving. It stops you from going through the process of understanding what your life was about. It holds them back if you're not careful. So well, bless his heart if he thinks he is talking to Elvis, but you know, as they say, it's horses for courses.
Absolutely. We've got some interesting questions which we'll kind of get to on the other part of the program next after the break. Any events that you've got coming up that you want to let people know about?
I think the big one that's coming up is usually sort of once a year, Spirit will do a big trance lecture. So by that, I mean I'm in trance, not the audience go in trance. I have been asked that before. So I will go into trance and either the Chow or the Oracle will come through and they're going to be delivering a lecture on peace. So it's peace for the inner or outer world, and it's at the College of Psychic Studies on the 25th of February. And it will be one of their very profound, very beautiful lectures.
That's fantastic. And the college is in London, isn't it? I always forget the address.
South Kensington.
Rosebery. Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. So if anyone's interested in that at all, then brilliant. We'll mention it again during the show. Okay, so we've got another question or two which are coming up, which we'll get to after the break. And I'm just looking at some of the questions that we got here and which to pose to yourself and which to pose to Master Chow. So I'm trying to sort it out in my head.
Yeah,
do that, I get grounded.
Which
is a bit of a problem. It does make you focus. Fantastic. So we'll be straight back right after this.
This is the voice of spirit, your connection to the other side.
To understand something spiritually, you must experience it. And in order to experience it, you have to experience it in your imagination.
Explore with us by calling 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230.
Give us a call now.
Worldwide Colors use Skype name KCOR Radio.
Everything that now exists was once imagined. Therefore, everything that is going to exist must first be imagined.
Back with your guide to spirit, Leo Bonomo.
Leo Bonomo.
After these brief words from our sponsors.
They say that the truth is stranger than fiction. What if they are one and the same?
It's a life form, unlike anything we know, not cellular but electrical in nature, extremely intelligent.
Join Dave Emmons, host of The Strange Truth, every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, as he connects the dots that others miss. The Strange Truth is a groundbreaking two-hour talk show that interviews the hottest UFO experts, experiencers, whistleblowers, and spiritual masters from around the world.
A tool for people to connect with the universe and begin to understand it.
The Strange Truth. It digs deep into current events, the extraterrestrial contact phenomenon, explores suppressed history, and dissects false flag conspiracy, all while expanding your spiritual ascendance.
What was that name again?
The Strange Truth, hosted by Dave Emmons, live every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the KCOR Digital Radio Network. Come get tomorrow's news today.
Immerse yourself in an epic journey through time, where ancient mysteries unfold within a story of love and betrayal, as well as a battle of good versus evil in The Emissary Book 1. The Reader's Favorite Gold Medal Award winner for Visionary Fiction 2019, The Action and Adventure of The Emissary, continues in The Emerald Tablet, Book 2. The 2019's Bronze Medal Award winner, The Emissary and The Emerald Tablet by Tamara Veach and Rennie DeFazio, are both available now on Amazon.com. Let your reading adventure begin.
Great.
The all-new KCOR Digital Radio Network.
Great. Please make a note of it.
We interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
At the end of the day, we turn the lights down in the KCOR studio.
Oh, sweet.
And crank up the hottest club songs from around the world.
This is the future.
The Grind, mixed by Tina Marie, your Vegas vixen of the high desert.
What about the body? What kind of body?
Good body. Nice body.
Every night from 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Pacific. The best 3 hours of commercial-free music.
New music first.
It's time to stand up and dance your ass off. The Grind, nightly and exclusively on the KCOR Digital Radio Network.
Come on, it's kind of hot.
Welcome back to the Voice of Spirit, your connection to the other side.
There's no accidents in this universe. We all show up here with a purpose. There's an intelligence that is a part of everything and everyone, and all of us are connected to it.
Connect with us on Twitter by using hashtag KCOR. Even better, join us live in our chat room at KCORradio.com. To get a free reading during the show, call 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230.
Give us a call now.
Worldwide callers, use Skype name KCOR Radio. And now, inspirational clairvoyant medium, psychic, and your connection to the spirit, the host of the Voice of Spirit, Leo Bonomo.
Hi, a very, very warm welcome back. And as you've heard, you've got that number. But if you want to join us in the chat room, you can join us in the chat room on Facebook. You can join us on the chat room here. There's a Twitter account as well. So if you have any questions that you would either like to ask Sarah from a development point of view, or Master Chow, you have a unique experience here tonight to perhaps place the same question to Sarah and to Master Chow. So do take advantage of this. It's really well worth it. So welcome back, Sarah.
Welcome back. Thank you. I was going to say, I love your promo bit. You chuck everything but the kitchen sink in there, don't you? Inspirational, clairvoyant, medium, psychic. Yeah, you're covering all your bases there, Leo.
I like to think it's all inspired, and 90% of what I do, you know, is inspired. But you know what it's like. Well, I suppose yours is in a different category. But you know, you can put clairvoyant medium, and you'll get a little bit of work if you're lucky. If you don't put psychic, you don't get the reaction. which is no respect.
Educate your audience.
That's the thing. But, you know, with no disrespect to other people that are well known as psychics, for me, it's like, that's not really where I am, but
no.
There you go. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful question from Suzanne Jurgensen. And the question is, when we contact spirits, we often hear about those that have passed away in the 19 and 1800s. Rarely do we hear from others who have passed before that time. Is it because they are left in an earthly life or in a life somewhere else?
I love it. That's a fabulous question. So thank you so much to Suzanne, because that one is brilliant. I can give you really good clarity on this because Master Chow predates Christ.
Yeah.
So she's absolutely spot on when she says you don't that often hear from spirits who are older than maybe the 1800s, because those are the souls in reflection. The souls in reflection will still be in the accent that they spoke in the language orientation, you know, the type of phrasing from that lifetime. Once they've gone through reflection and they go back into their higher self, they become spirit as an entirety, and dates and names don't matter so much. So Chow steps forward as one of the lifetimes that he's had. It's the one he chose because it best represents what he wants to do and best represents what we will connect to, because, you know, it's the wise Chinese sage. It's an archetype. It's something we will listen to. So that's why he chose that lifetime. And the only reason we know when he passed is because people invariably kept asking him. But it wasn't something he stepped forward to talk about. So when they are a soul in reflection, because they are in that lifetime, dates, the way their life was, there are facts and figures, there are pieces of evidence that anchor them. That's why you get that kind of knowledge. But once they go back into the higher self, back into the entirety of who they are, they then step forward in a much more conglomerate kind of a way. And then you'll only get dates and that if it's particular or specific or there's a reason for it. So from Chow's point of view, the reason came about several years into our work because people kept asking. Because they just kind of wanted to know, well, what gives you the right to talk about human life? Why do you think you know about it? And that's kind of how it came about. He said, well, when I was Chow, I predated Christ. And that's why we know when that particular lifetime of his was. But it isn't his last lifetime.
No.
And we know about his last lifetime because people, again, invariably ask about it. And we know his last physical incarnation was around the time of the Second World War. So when it's a whole spirit, it's a spirit being with all the lifetimes, the dates, the where they lived, how they lived is less relevant. It's more what they know, what they can teach us, what they can inspire us with. But when it's a soul in reflection, which is why you're looking at that 100, 200 year mark, because that's, you know, it takes a good couple of hundred years for us to pass through reflection normally.
Yeah.
Then the date is relevant because that is, you know, if you think it takes on average 200 years, but it can take 1,000 years, it can take 100 years. Then yes, 1800s, of course, that's 200 years back. So in 100 years from now, we probably won't get anyone any further back than the 1900s. It'll just gently move forward with us. But that's why you get that difference. So the date, that type of date information, can also let you know whether or not it's a soul in reflection or whether they are back into the entirety of spirit. Because again, with students, we've done some interesting work working with different philosophers from different walks of life and different timings. Yeah. So if it's within I always say, leave them 100 years. Don't try and talk to anybody until they've been dead for 100 years. Leave them in peace. Mm. After 100 years, they will probably still be in reflection. If you go back 500 years, 1,000 years, chances are they're going to be a spirit, and you're getting the essence of the philosopher rather than the soul that was the philosopher. So we've had some really interesting ones with philosophers from the 1800s, 1700s, and we've had Aristotle much further back. The essence of him likes to come through and talk and write, particularly. He writes very beautifully. So you kind of just have to remember that though there is no time in spirit, the timing from our perspective does matter.
Yeah.
So the 100, 200 years, 300 years, you're probably looking at a soul in reflection. And that's why you see more of them.
Yeah, that's brilliant and beautifully put. Suzanne's got a second question. Mm-hmm. And she asks, when you go into trance and you can then feel that your body is changing, how does it feel when the voice comes through from Master Chow? Can you feel the changes in your throat and talk that way? So I think what she's really saying is, are you very aware of the changes and the deepening of the voice, or is it just something that you're not really aware of?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, after all the years we've been working together, because I mean, Chow himself has been coming through me now since sort of 2002 2003. It's we've been together longer than most marriages. Nowadays I don't feel anything. It is for me as normal as picking up a book. What does it feel like to pick up a book? Do you really pay attention to what the book feels like? No, you've just picked up a book. It's utterly second nature. But I can remember when I was a student, when I was learning, that you did feel things. Physiologically, you feel things. And I try and help my students with this a lot, because the body is not a very good measurement of what's going on. Because as spirits start to blend with your aura, your body physiologically starts to respond and tries to translate the information. So you can feel your hands getting fatter, your body getting bigger. You might feel that you're taller, or you're more masculine or more feminine. And it's just the body's way of trying to work out what is ostensibly this alien invader trying to do to it. The more you work, the deeper you do go into the altered state, the level of altered state matters now, then the less you actually feel. And it's one of those kind of interesting things that there's a sort of a tipping point with the altered states between when you feel a lot to when you feel absolutely nothing. So as you arc through channeling into light trance, you'll start feeling more and more. And then as you drop through light trance right the way down, you'll feel less and less, because it's just the nature of how the altered state works and your own physiology works. So with Chow, I it's no different to me just going to sleep.
Yeah, because we sort of talked about that before, didn't we, where I think I asked, it may have been a student, and the question was, where do you go? And I remember you saying, or I think I remember you saying, will I get shifted and they just keep me amused or keep me distracted and that's it? Is that correct? And has it moved on now? Because that was several years ago.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know where I go. I don't know what I do. Just time passes. it's kind of like, it's not, I know I'm not asleep.
Yeah.
And that's an odd one, because students often say to me, you know, I'm worried I'm going to fall asleep. And it's like, no, falling asleep really does feel different. So I know I'm not asleep, but I also know I'm not there. It's a state of being that we don't have the vocabulary for. Because it isn't our natural state of being. Our natural state of being is to be alert, to be awake, to be conscious, to be aware of our surroundings. It's part of our survival instinct, as ostensibly, because the human body is part of the animal kingdom. So you're going against human nature to actually be in this type of state. So the closest thing to it would be the falling asleep bit. You know, if you've nodded off in front of the telly, you weren't quite asleep, but you weren't awake either, but you kind of know your program on the telly has ended. It's kind of that sort of tipping point, that moment of shift that you are more aware of. So when you're in the altered states, you tend to not realize you're in them until you come back from them. And then you realize that, oh, hold on a second, what just happened?
That's brilliant. We've got a question from Christian, and he says, hello, Sarah. How can anyone start learning or keep practicing trance on his own? And that's regards from Argentina. So
I know Christian.
Yeah. Oh, you know Christian.
Yes, I've met Christian, bless him. Came all the way to the College of Psychic Studies to when they were doing their summer school, the bits during the exhibition last summer. So I've met him, so it's really, really sweet of him to write in with a question. And I know he does want to learn how to do trance. It's a really difficult one, because I tend to sit in the school of thought that it isn't something you can learn on your own. And I get vilified by other trance mediums of sorts about that, who say, of course you can, it's spirit are intelligent and spirit know what they're doing. Yes, but it's not their responsibility. It's ours. So you do need to find someone you can trust. You do need to find someone who understands trance, who can be there to keep you safe. Because if you really do actually genuinely alter your consciousness, you need someone who can bring you back round again, who can make sure that in an emergency you are safe. And to expect spirit to do that, well, no, we have personal responsibility for our lives. That's our job. Secondly, trance mediumship for the vast majority is about speaking. So if you are on your own, who are they speaking to? They need engagement. They need interaction. They need encouragement. And, you know, it's like a child. You have to give them praise and you need to go, that's great. Can I have a bit more? And it's a, it's kind of a push and a pull. When you're along the lines of the development and they can come through and they can speak, then you could sit there with a recorder and just record what came through. But at the very beginning, they need help. They need someone to go, I can see you're there. Keep at it. It's going really well. Can you tell us about this? Or could you talk to me about that? They need that interaction. So genuinely being on your own at the very beginning of your trance development, for me, in my opinion, I don't recommend.
I don't either, because there are, you know, it's not, I think you need some sort of experience, either perhaps of mental mediumship or having some guidance, because of course that there are elements in spirit that are not so nice, and if you succumb to that.
And you do need someone who is willing to challenge them, willing to criticize them, willing to play devil's advocate and question, because, as you say, there are elements that come through that aren't acting for your best interests, that aren't acting for humanity's best interest. They are self-serving. And they will basically use you however you let them use you. And for students, lots of students are very worried about not attracting the wrong type of energy. But actually the fear itself almost makes you more inviting, because it's a challenge. So knowing that you have someone there who's got your back, you've got someone there who's going to look at that spirit and go, no, we're not having that. You can clear off. You know, as a teacher, my job is to teach the student and the spirit. Because spirit is often learning how to do this when they start with a new medium.
Yeah.
And they're learning, how do I make sound? How do I use a tongue? You have no idea how complicated the human vocal cords, larynx, and tongue are as a mechanism to make sound. So if you want to do trance, you need help. You need people with you. If you want to do channeling, well, that's slightly different because it's not so deep. They don't come in so deep. You're often working with energies that are working with lots of different people, so are more experienced, your angelics, your ascended masters. So it's deeper than inspirational, but it isn't as deep as trance. So it does depend, though, so what you want to do. Are you calling it trance because you don't realize there's actually something else? I hear a lot of descriptions of trance mediumship where I read how they are describing what they're doing. And then I sort of put my head in my hands and go, okay, that's inspirational speaking. That's not trance mediumship. So be careful of your choice of words. Do you really need to be doing trance, or actually could you be doing inspirational speaking? Because you can do that on your own. If you do some mediumship training, you could practice inspirational speaking. You could practice inspirational writing. No problem. And build up a relationship with spirit and build up trust in, you know, you trust them as well as they trust you. It's both ways before perhaps you leap feet first into trance.
It's very much a two-way thing. And I'm sure people will find it interesting when you say, you know, that spirit, when you begin in trance, they need encouragement. Because you often hear mediums from the platform saying, you know, it would be helpful for me to hear your voice, but it's spirit need that vibration, that link. You know,
I always remember a story when I was training to do trance mediumship, of someone who was training in trance in the old-fashioned way, which was one person was training to be the trance medium, and they had a group of what was classed as sitters. So these were people who gave up their time, gave up their energy to literally sit for that one person to train and to help with energy and to help with encouragement. And the story goes that this person had been sitting for like 8 or 9 years, and everybody knew spirit was there, but they never spoke. And one night, someone unusually brought a guest, and the evening started as it normally did. And they were sitting there, and the spirit was sitting in the person, and everyone was aware they were there. And the guest, unbeknownst to anybody else, just turned around and said, "Oh, hello." And the spirit went, "Oh, hello, you're speaking to me. I've been waiting." Just carried on talking. And they had literally been waiting for an invitation to speak. Now, is that story true, or is that story, you know, an old wives' tale? I can see that there is elements of truth in it, because I myself know I've had sitters. I've worked with sitters for my own development. And there is that. Do we talk to them? Do we ask them what should we do? What shouldn't we do? And there is, again, that reverence for spirit that, no, you don't interrupt it. Spirit have to do it. They'll come forward when they're ready.
Yeah. But spirit, you hear that a lot, don't you?
But they need just that interaction. And then they were off and running, and you couldn't shut them up for a month of Sundays. And I think that's rather lovely. So this is a particular type of thing where it's a kind of a group work, if you like. As a trance medium, I don't work in isolation. He needs me to do my part. I need him to do his part. But everybody else in the room is also part of it. So the audience, the questions they ask, the way they engage with him will bring through different information, will bring through more information or less information. And you know, you are asking about the sort of psychic questions. And, you know, he does get asked them, and he usually just jokes around, "Well, you cross my palm with silver and we'll see what happens," you know.
Yeah.
But, you yourself have been there, where if the questions are all pretty straightforward, pretty ordinary, the kind of thing we always get asked, there's no momentum, it doesn't go anywhere. But you get thrown a really juicy, really interesting question, and oh my Lord, the sky's the limit. Yeah. Which is why I loved Suzanne's question. I mean, that's a great question. The better the questions, the more interesting, that will bring more out from any spirit that's coming through a trance medium. I think sometimes we don't challenge them enough.
I think you're right, because there seem to be some sort of standard questions that we as mediums get asked. Yeah. And it's like, oh, again, but it's somebody that's asked and they don't know. But as you say, when you get something you can get your teeth into, especially the spirit coming through, you might accidentally hit on their favorite subject.
Yeah.
And wow. Yeah. We've noticed that with Master Chow sometimes, when we've had a group in that, it's been hard work because you're in trance, and it's been hard work for me to get, I always say, write down loads of questions, make them sensible, loads of questions and ask, and then we get there and they're all sitting there waiting for somebody else to speak.
Yep, there's nothing. You get that blank expression. I know. It's a tricky one. It is. But I also have the joy of going to sit every now and then with a group that have been sitting since 1977. And through lots of incarnations, lots of different people coming and going. And the guy who runs it has been with the group since 1977. And he feels that they're very knowledgeable and they know lots. And then they ask a question and Chow answers it. And then he says to me afterwards, yeah, we don't know anywhere near what we thought we knew. And they've been going since 1977.
Oh, bless. So we're just going to go into a break. Keep listening, because you'll hear Sarah in trance and Master Chow himself. So we'll be straight back after this.
You've been listening to Leo Bonomo.
Leo Bonomo.
The host of The Voice of Spirit. Live every Thursday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on the KCOR Digital Radio Network. For more information on the show, guests, and host of The Voice of Spirit, or to book a private reading, please visit leo-bonomo.com. That's leo-bonomo.com. Your connection to the other side is just a phone call away. The Voice of Spirit.
It is amazing, is it not?
This is KCOR Las Vegas, home of the Digital Radio Network, broadcasting from a shack just south of Area 51.
Wait, that doesn't exist.
This is the KCOR Digital Radio Network. Now for the news.
In the deep recesses of one's mind, there is a voice. A guiding light through the darkness. A connection to the other side.
You're ready to wake up, you're going to wake up. And if you're not ready, you're going to stay pretending that you're just a little, poor little me.
Pathway to spiritual that echoes with enlightenment. The Voice of Spirit.
The Voice of Spirit.
You are a function of this total galaxy, bounded by the Milky Way, and that furthermore, this galaxy is a function of all other galaxies.
Your journey starts here and now. With your host and connection to spirit, Leo Bonomo. Leo Bonomo. Leo Bonomo.
Hi, a very, very warm welcome to the third segment of the show. If you have just joined us, be sure to listen to the archive, because you will have heard Sarah Tyler Walters speaking, and she's an excellent trance medium, and we now have her guide Master Chow. So it's quite a change in voice and personality. So without any further ado, hi Master Chow, how are you?
Oh, good evening. Good evening. As I was saying to you earlier, I am still dead.
Yes.
And still enjoying being dead.
That's fantastic, because I know for those that are still here and maybe have great doubts about any afterlife and that kind of experience, it's quite a strange thing, isn't it, for them to understand the connection and what it's like being in spirit.
Well, I don't think it is. I don't think it's complicated to think about, or indeed that you struggle to think about it. I think society and religion makes you struggle.
Yeah.
Makes you question what you fundamentally understand at a very core level. Because at a core level, your soul knows it belongs to something greater than you. It doesn't question that. It doesn't query it on a daily basis. It absolutely knows it is part of something bigger than itself. So that intrinsic understanding is within you all the time. So actually the idea of life beyond isn't beyond your soul's comprehension, and your soul is sitting there. You just keep ignoring it.
Yeah. And I think that's one of dangers is the right word, it's one of the dangers of religion, isn't it, that it alters this concept, and no pun intended, but does put the fear of God in you.
Yes, it puts the fear of death in you.
The fear of death, absolutely.
And that is such a shame, because physical death can be unpleasant. It would be wrong of us to suggest otherwise. And the more creative humanity gets, the more creative you seem to get at making death difficult and torturous. But for the soul, death is not torturous. It is not painful. It is not suffering. It is straightforward and simple. So the two halves of you do experience it in two slightly different ways. Mm. So sudden death can be quite jarring to your physical body.
Yeah.
But the soul, woof, off she goes. Not a problem.
Yeah.
So you need to consider your ideas about death a little bit more. I think people always go, they're afraid of death, but they're not. They're afraid of how they're going to die, and will it be painful? Mm. Will they suffer?
Yeah.
And it would be wrong of spirit to say to you, of course not, no suffering, everything will be peaceful, because we cannot guarantee that. Mm. A lot of passing will be relatively peaceful, but a percentage will not be. It will be more difficult because of disease or war or humans attacking humans. But underneath that suffering will be an enormous amount of peace that you have access to, that peace that sits within the soul. And of course, your own guides wanting to create that moment of peace for you, even if it is right at the very last moment they can get it there, they will move heaven and earth, pardon the pun, to get it to you. So that as the soul is released from the body, it can be released from the pain.
Yes, absolutely. We have a question here from a lovely lady, a regular, Suzanne, and she asked Sarah this, and her question is, when we contact spirits, we often hear about those who have passed away in the 1900s and 1800s. Rarely do we hear from others who have passed before that time. Is it because they are left in an earthly life or in a life somewhere else?
Well, the somewhere else is an interesting idea. I suppose in many ways it is the somewhere else, because once the soul has gone through reflection, there also is a point of which, is there any need or any point to talk to humanity? Because, you know, don't take this the wrong way, but your hard work.
Yes.
You know, so when the souls are in reflection, communicating with humanity is part of growth. It's part of learning. It's part of coming to terms with what you have experienced in your life. So there is a need. There is a process. There is a commonality of need that drives communication.
Yeah.
Once you have left reflection, though, quite frankly, the need is not the same. And a lot of souls will return back into their spirit beings and find their spirit beings are not that particularly interested in humanity. Mm. Not how to really have anything they want to talk to you about, because they've already sent another soul down and that one's busily having another lifetime. So sometimes you'll find that we don't actually have anything to talk to you about. So then the older ones aren't stepping forward as much. Or when they do, things like date of birth, really not that important. even date of death, not that important. Mm. You know, they will step forward as a communicator for humanity with a focused thing they want to talk about.
Yes.
And often that is very generic in the sense of it doesn't matter, were they Egyptian, were they Native American Indian, were they from Hawaii? I don't know. Looks like an interesting island. I thought I'd pick it up at random. It matters more that they want to talk to you about healing, or they want to talk to you about ways that you might heal your own trauma. And they don't want to distract from that with, well, arbitrary pieces of information.
Yes.
Because it can be very arbitrary, you know. And sometimes humanity, you do lock on to the strangest pieces of information. you know, you obsess about what was it like when you were alive.
Yes.
What does it matter what it was like when I was alive? I'm not alive. I'm dead. It's far more important what it's like now.
Mm.
But you obsess about the minutiae of human incarnation. And it distracts then from what it is that we can teach. So sometimes we have to consider, do we tell you?
Yes.
Is it better to not tell you? Is it better to be more faceless, more anonymous, more ambiguous? Does that help you listen to the message? Or, in my case, taking the persona, stepping forward in this lifetime, helps you hear my message?
Yeah.
So I give you a little bit of information about when I was Chow. Mm. Because it helps with the trust. It helps with the relationship to me, if you like.
Yes, it's like a Maurice Barbonell, isn't it, and Silver Birch. And the common concept was of him as a North American Indian.
But he was in reflection.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
So Silver Birch was a soul in reflection.
Yes.
Yeah. But he was on his way out. He was speaking through Maurice as part of the end of his journey through reflection.
Mm.
Yeah. When he was giving back and showing what he had learned and what he understood.
Yeah. And but
his teaching always sits in his original lifetime.
Mm. Yeah. That's very interesting to know. There's a gentleman that you may know through Sarah called Christian. And he says, how can I differentiate messages that come from my soul from the messages that come from his guides?
Well, direction. Mm. Your soul, the messages will rise up in you. Your guides will appear to come from behind and wrap around the head. Mm. So direction. First and foremost, direction. That will tell you a lot of information. So always pay attention to the where you are hearing it, where you are feeling the information. Two, the type of information. Your guides cannot tell you what to do. They can suggest, they can point you in this direction, they can reassure you. Your soul, however, can tell you what to do. It can be very blunt.
Mm.
So the type of information can also help you with who is talking to you. But remember, it doesn't matter. You can always challenge it, ask for confirmation, ask for it again to be sure, and pick the information apart. You do have free will. You do have a right to go, no, I don't fancy that.
Absolutely. So I think some people lose sight of that, don't they? They get a message and they go, well, spirits told me I have to do this. And
but spirit should not have told you you have to do anything.
Absolutely.
If a voice is coming to you going, you must do this, tell them to go away, because that's not spirit.
Fantastic. We've got two questions here from a regular, and the first is, can you tell us more about the reception centers that help those newly returned to spirit?
I think reception centers is quite a human idea. So I believe the lady is referring to what goes on in reflection. So in reflection, it's a miasma of energy fields and planes and spaces that depend very much on your belief. So if you believe that there are pearly gates, you will see pearly gates. If you are an atheist and you believe there is nothing, you will see nothing. So your belief creates, first and foremost, what you experience. So once you've stepped into reflection, into your own creation, we then work very, very hard to get you out of it. Either leading you down a beautiful path if you've gone through pearly gates, or breaking through the darkness with light if you're in an abyss, because that's what you think as an atheist. But also we are respectful of why you have put yourself in that place. Respectful that the religious connotation, the belief connotations must be honored and gently teased out, gently revealed to be false or unnecessary or superficial. So there are a lot of spirits who work in reflection, helping the souls to adjust, to deal with the loss of the physical body, to deal with the loss of identity, to deal with the sudden realization that, oh my God, there is something. To deal with the fact that, oh my God, I now have no power, because you really don't. So these things are all there that we need to step forward and help with. So each individual soul gets assigned helpers. Your guides carry on with you in reflection. Helping other energies be introduced to you, your own loved ones, if there is a good relationship, will also help in this process if they're still in reflection. So there is an enormous amount of assistance. No soul is left alone. Even the atheists who create an abyss are never truly alone. We are always standing right by their side. We just might be invisible. So we use a lot of creative imagination. It's an odd thought. I don't think humans necessarily think that spirit have imagination. And definitely when you get back into being an actual spirit being, the idea of imagination no longer has any validity. But in reflection, in those early processes, the human idea of imagination, the creative mind, if you like, is still present in an energetic form. So we use a lot of visualizations, a lot of imagery, a lot of sensory information, albeit it's all energy. The soul hasn't yet completely let go of the human concept of perception and sensory information. So we artificially create that, if you like. So they see things, they feel things, they smell things, they hear things, albeit they are really just experiencing energy. Did that answer the question?
I think so, and I'm sure that the lady will get back to see if there's an addition to that. One of the other questions that they've asked as well is, can you tell us more about how spirit helps those that stay on Earth after passing? So I think she's talking about Earthbounds.
Well, that's a tricky one, because it's always a very delicate conversation to have. Because we have to be mindful that not all humans believe in the idea of Earthbound spirits. So for those of you that do, who do consider this as part of the reality, you need to understand that when they are earthbound, our hands are slightly tied.
Yeah.
Because the laws of free will still apply while you are in the physical realm. Once you're in reflection, whole different ballgame. But while you are earthbound, the laws of free will apply. Mm. And if the soul has chosen to stay, free will applies. And we have to honor that. And it can make it a little bit more tricky to assist them. So we often have to work through human mediators, so human healers that we can guide and direct and assist in helping the soul, rather than directly helping the soul. If, however, the soul has become earthbound through incident rather than intention,
yes,
then that's different. We can assist a lot more, a lot quicker, because free will, we can kind of get around it a little bit better.
Yes.
So yeah, the reason for the attaching to the earth does matter with regards to how much we can step in. But however it comes around, we do not abandon them. We do not leave them. Their own guides do not leave them. It gets trickier and more difficult to assist the longer they are earthbound, but that just means we have to double our efforts to bring human intervention, because for earthbound, often a human intervention is the best course of action, and we will be behind that, supporting in the silence, if you like.
Yeah. So would that be because they are
identifying as being human?
Yes.
They're wanting to be human. They're not wanting to let go of physical. They are ostensibly turning their back on spirit, so therefore are less willing to take our assistance.
Makes perfect sense. If we look at that from the point of view of staying connected, are there certain factors, perhaps like revenge or money or an identity they've created, a famous personality perhaps, that is stronger in retaining that connection to Earth? Or are they more or less the same, just slightly different avenues?
Usually it is a belligerent denial of death.
Right.
You know, I'm not going.
Yes.
And that can be driven by lots of motivations. It can be driven by fear of what they think they're going to walk into. You know, if you've been brought up in certain religions where you think fire, hell, damnation, would you want to cross over into that?
Yeah.
You know, the fear of that can be incredibly compelling.
Mm-hmm.
So that can make you hold on, latch on to wanting to stay here. So it can be driven from fear. It can be driven from a hunger for power. It can be driven from lots of different reasons. But ultimately, there has to be a lot of power behind it if they are choosing to stay.
Yes.
So as I say, the intent ones tend to be very focused on I'm not budging.
Yeah.
The accidental, incidental ones, that tends to be because the death was so sudden, there is almost, if you like, a momentary lapse in the disengaging of the soul. It didn't quite line up right. And that happens rarer than the intentional stayers.
Yes, yes. Because there's been quite a lot of talk, and I've listened to Leslie Flint's recordings as well, and about the death sentence and how wrong that is, because that sets up a mindset as well, doesn't it?
But again, see, you cannot make it a generic statement like that.
Yes. Yes.
Because if it's in your culture for the death sentence, then there is an agreement within all the humans at that time that this is part of life.
Yeah.
So therefore, if a person is lost their life through a death sentence, that doesn't mean they're going to get trapped here. Because at some level, they do understand that that is part of what current society and culture is creating. And actually, you've been executing people for thousands of years. It's not a modern day phenomenon. In fact, you do it far less now than you have done historically. So it's not a given that if a person is executed, they are more likely to be earthbound. Right. In fact, a lot of them, you'd be surprised to find out that actually they pass very swiftly. Because a lot of the time, not so much now in your timeline, more historically, execution really had very little basis in fact. So the way of living was much simpler. The ideas around death were much simpler. You didn't expect to live so long. You knew your life could be taken at any moment. So therefore, your resistance to the death itself was far less than you have now.
Yes, yes. I think I was thinking of those that that are in prison waiting, you know, decades sometimes for that.
But you'll find a lot of them actually often come to a very deep peace with the inevitability of it. In some ways, the longer they are held in this stasis, the greater chance for them to come to a place of peace before the actual execution. So it's an odd conundrum there, because on the one hand, keeping them on these abeyances like this seems cruel, and unnecessary and additional torture. But actually, in a fair percentage of numbers, it actually helps them find peace. So it's a very difficult one to balance. But it has to come down to humanity's own choices around morality. And understanding why you are opting for that ultimate penalty. And being a little bit less arbitrary about it.
Yes. We're just going to go into a break, Master Chow, and we'll be speaking straight after this.
This is the Voice of Spirit, your connection to the other side.
To understand something spiritually, you must experience it. And in order to experience it, you have to experience it in your imagination.
Explore with us by calling 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230.
Give us a call now.
Worldwide callers use Skype name KCOR Radio.
Everything that now exists was once imagined. Therefore, everything that is going to exist must first be imagined.
Back with your guide to spirit, Leo Bonomo.
Leo Bonomo.
After these brief words from our sponsors.
Thursday nights are about to get weird on the KCOR Digital Radio Network. Join hosts Timothy Beckley and Tim Swartz as they go exploring the bizarre. Jet across the cosmos with two of the most electrifying paranormal researchers in the known universe. Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. Exploring the bizarre takes you deep within the world of the unexplained. UFOs, ghosts, lost world, cryptozoology. It's time to take back the night with hosts Timothy Beckley and Tim Swartz. Exploring the bizarre. Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. Only on the KCOR Digital Radio Network.
1, 2, 3, 4.
To the KCOR Digital Radio Network.
I love the way it sounds.
I love the music.
Oh, I listen to it.
The future of radio is here and now.
The only.
Looking for intelligent talk? Then look no further. Expedition Truth. Expedition Truth. Hosted by Jack Ashcraft. Live on Thursdays, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. Exclusively on the KCOR Digital Radio Network. From spirituality and prophecies to philosophy, politics and science, and so much more, Expedition Truth is setting new standards for what intelligent talk radio should be. Jack explores all of the hot topics, as well as interviews some of the most respected academics and authors in their respective fields today. Expedition Truth, live on Thursdays, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. Intelligent talk for the discerning mind, because the truth never fears questions.
Dad! Come on! Over here! Look at this, Dad! Over! Whoa!
The moment my son saw a redwood tree.
It's huge!
Is the moment I knew that for him?
You can't even see the top of that thing.
Even the sky has no limit.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, biking, fishing, or camping. Or do your own thing when you get there with family and friends. Your moment is out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Voice of Spirit, your connection to the other side.
There's no accidents in this universe. We all show up here with a purpose. There's an intelligence that is a part of everything and everyone, and all of us are connected to it.
Connect with us on Twitter by using hashtag KCOR. Even better, join us live in our chat room at kcorradio.com. To get a free reading during the show, call 702-425-9230. That's 702-425-9230.
Give us a call now.
Worldwide callers, use Skype name KCOR Radio. And now, inspirational clairvoyant medium, psychic, and your connection to the spirit, the host of the Voice of Spirit, Leo Bonomo.
Very warm welcome back, and we're extremely privileged to have Master Chow here. I learn something every time, as I do in my own work, and it's mostly what I learn is I don't really know anything. So welcome back, Master Chow. You were answering a question posed by Raven's Pride, and you mentioned incident as in passing quickly, and what she's written is, do you mean when by incident, do you mean when passing happens quickly, like in a car accident?
Yes, it could be a car accident that is unexpected. It could be a sudden cardiac death that catches people out, because it catches the body out as well. Yeah. There are times sometimes where death happens so suddenly that the body and the soul hasn't quite had that few seconds to anticipate it, didn't see it coming in that sense. So doesn't normally happen because of illness. Sudden cardiac death would be the only exception, or indeed occasionally an aneurysm, if you weren't aware that you had it. Because the lights literally go out in an instant. Yes. And that can be the sort of incident that just there is a jarring, if you like, almost a sort of a hesitation. And that can occasionally be an incident that might cause a soul to get stuck.
Yes, and of course, unfortunately, we're going through a phase now where there are lots of terrorist bombers, and you know, it's literally like it may be a hall or a train, and there's just the explosion.
But see, now that's not a very good example. Because actually, unless you are right on top of the explosive, death is not genuinely instant.
Right. Okay.
So that's not actually a very good example. In fact, that's a worse example, because often explosions like that, the death is not instantaneous, unless you are right in the blast zone, right in the close up to the explosion itself. So not a good example.
Thank you.
It has to be absolutely instantaneous with no seeing it coming. Those are the type of incidents we are referring to.
Ah, bless you, and thank you so much for that. Suzanne's written, and she says, Master Chow, in my circle we work with trance. Do you have any good advice to give them?
Okay, well, keep going. That's advice number one, because it is a long road. And people do give up halfway. Things don't happen very quickly with trance. And as humans, you do like things to be a bit instantaneous and speedy. And trance is much more of the tortoise in this story than the hare. So number one, keep going. Don't lose sight of why you are doing it. Be kind to yourselves. Don't beat yourselves up if it seems like you're plateauing. That is very normal with any form of mediumship, but especially with trance. Also, be creative. Don't do the same thing every time you sit, because you get bored and the dead get bored. So throw out a little bit of a challenge. Mix it up occasionally. You know, we like to play instruments.
Yes.
Did you know that? We like to things we can hit and ring. This is great fun. We have wonderful fun doing that. So don't always expect us to speak. Sometimes allow us to move, or allow us to draw or write or play a chime of some sort. Because sometimes communication is subtler than the spoken word.
Absolutely. And I suppose when you're striking an instrument or writing or doing something, you're gaining experience in the manipulation of the body.
Absolutely. And also sound is incredibly healing. And, you know, words are just a form of sound. So allow us to play by allowing yourselves to play. Lastly, the one thing I would say is be clear about why you are sitting. Curiosity is okay. It'll take you so far, but it will not take you to the finish line. Trance is a calling. It is a deep-seated calling. It is something the soul has agreed to do, because it is all of you that has to be doing this. Yeah. It isn't something mental mediums. You're using your mind, but the rest of you isn't involved. Trance mediums, it's the mind, it's the body, it's the aura, it's the chakras, it's the soul itself, it's the entire spiritual and personal understanding. It's all encompassing. So it has to be something you are really drawn to do, or you will not give yourself over to it in the way trance, true trance, really requires.
Okay, thank you. We've got a couple of questions from Chaham, and she says, please could I ask Master Chow about meditation and why we are asked to meditate? We are also told the mind is an amazing machine, but it feels like it can be a problem thinking so much, and we do not seem to know how to use it properly. So that's the first question.
So two different aspects there. So why does everybody tell you to meditate? Well, quite frankly, because your body needs the rest. If you go back hundreds, thousands of years, your mind was not so busy. Your mind was not trying to do 50 million things at the same time. It was just focused on doing one thing. You were involved in the thing you were doing. It was all encompassing. And that was a form of meditation. So meditation allows you to have a pause, to have some stillness. But it also allows you to hear your soul again. Because again, chatter, 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 going off in the mind, all of this technology, all of this information drowns out the sound of your own soul. So meditation allows you to hear that voice. But bear in mind, when I am talking meditation, I am not talking any of this visualization mumbo jumbo. This isn't see yourself in a field with rainbows. That has nothing to do with meditation. It's breathing, it's coming down within yourself, and it is being silent in body and mind. That is what I mean when I say meditation. And that form of meditation helps with high blood pressure, helps with stress, helps with oxygenating the body, which helps you have focus and clarity. So it has physiological impact. The other part of her question is about the mind. And your minds are just too busy. So busy. How you manage to sleep at night is a miracle. Because you've got all of this stuff, all this data overload going on. Yeah. So it is becoming far more difficult for humans to actually be human. You are actually moving away from your core function as a human, which is being physical, into being purely mentally driven. Yeah. And that isn't your natural state. And your bodies are suffering. You have issues with blood pressure. You have issues with weight. You have issues with diabetes. These things are linked to mind overload, lack of body engagement.
Yeah.
So physical activity, physically being in your life, needs to be balanced out. All this being in your heads is doing your bodies no good. So meditation is, if you like, one tool to just get you out of your head for a little while. But so is gardening. So is swimming. I always advocate swimming. It's very good for your body. Being with friends, talking, conversation, all of these things help.
Great, thank you. And there is another question from the same person. And mm-hmm. she says, she wants to ask about struggle. And she says, we are told struggle is not a punishment, but it feels like people struggle so much. Can she ask why we seem to have to struggle?
Well, you don't have to struggle. That's the problem. The reality is that if you were all on path, walking the path your soul is here for, staying in balance and in harmony, there would be considerably less struggle. Yeah. It wouldn't be completely eradicated, but of course the struggle would then be challenge, not strife. Be very different.
Yes. Yes.
But because you are not walking your paths, you are all out of balance. You're being knocked out of balance by your parents. Your parents are knocked out by their parents. You're knocked out by your loved ones, your boyfriends, your girlfriends. You're knocked out by your neighbors and life and presidents. Don't get me started. So you keep getting pushed more and more away from your own equilibrium. That creates struggle. That creates suffering. So suffering is not intrinsically part of the human condition. Challenge is, learning is, but not suffering per se. But again, see, religion also, it doesn't help because it's also built suffering into its dynamic.
Yes, and it's very much an advocate, isn't it?
And that again, if you haven't suffered, you haven't worked hard enough. What sort of rubbish is that? You know, life isn't designed to be hard.
Yeah.
It's designed to flow.
Yeah.
And that is very, very different. And flow is still challenging.
Yes.
But not constantly.
Yes. Yeah.
And flow is a state we see so few of you in. We see most of you in struggling, in penance of some sort, in anguish. And that is a word we don't like to use, but it is true when we look at you. That is not how it is designed to be. It is about coming back to your own healing.
Yes. We have another question here, and it kind of touches on what you've just spoken about. And you've had many lives. Can you give some examples of those passings, quite simple ones, and perhaps some that might not be considered pleasant?
Well, that's an odd question, but okay. Seems to be quite obsessed with death this evening, don't we?
But,
you know, well, it's a part of your life, I suppose. So let me see now. Well, as Chow, I died in my sleep, so that one wasn't very exciting. Last incarnation, Johnny, well, he died through his own stupidity. Yeah. So he basically was not paying attention when he was near a bomb site, and, well, he fell into it and died from the injuries he sustained. Let me see now. Well, we often talk about Marcus. That was a fun lifetime. As I often say, Marcus was a lifetime of learning about vanity.
Yeah.
So he died very much at his own hand. He was very vain. He was very beautiful. And when his beauty started to wane, he did not know how to place himself in the world.
Yeah.
So Marcus did not have a very nice ending. So his ending was at his own hands, but not directly. Being a soldier, he was able to create a situation where someone else took his life for him.
Right. Yeah.
But it wasn't a very pleasant passing from a physical perspective. Being run through with a broadsword is not something I would recommend.
No.
Let me see now. If I go back further, well, some of the early lifetimes you died of starvation. That one's not a nice one. That's quite a long, slow one, that one.
Yes.
Let me see now. Drowning is very common. I don't recommend that one. It's not one I'm looking forward to doing again. Nice one. I fell I fell out of a plane once. Yeah, that was an odd one.
Yeah.
Can't quite remember what I was doing in the plane, or even if it was a plane, but I knew I fell from a very great height.
Right, okay. Because well, the rumor is that before the body hits or impacts, that we eject.
No, that's not true. I wish that was true. That one's not true. No, I remember hitting
the
ground.
You have the full experience. Right. So it's the thing is,
I can't remember why that life did that one. So I don't know if it was something I was choosing to learn from. See, sometimes you choose to have diseases because of what the diseases teach you. They're very powerful teachers. So sometimes physical ailments, disabilities come under this category, that the soul in the body that has the physical challenges may not be the one that's doing the learning. The learning may be about the people who are watching, helping, involved in the life. So actually the suffering of the person with the physical challenges may be lesser than the people who are watching.
Yes.
So sometimes the life isn't about you. It's about what it's teaching. So sometimes going through a death that is seemingly not that pleasant is because of what it teaches others. Martyrs, for instance, I think of Joan of Arc there, in the sense of being burned at the stake. Now, that's a way you don't want to go.
Yeah.
She did that because of what she was teaching.
Yes.
So there was an agreement that her life would be taken, not necessarily specifically by burning, because there's no way of guaranteeing that. But that soul definitely knew that lifetime was not going to be very long.
Yes.
And that the death would be for others.
Yes, like the Christ, I suppose.
Or we could spend all night talking about that one.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll stick to more recent history. There's more fact involved in that one. Yes. Hence why I picked Joan of Arc.
Yes.
You know, she is a true figure. She did die in a gruesome way. But, oddly enough, peacefully.
Yes. Yeah.
Because she died for what she believed in. And belief is incredibly powerful when it comes to the moment of death.
Absolutely. As you kind of explained before, your beliefs carry through and you find yourself there.
Yes.
And we've got another question by Charam. And she says, may I ask a question about Mother Earth? We see that she's struggling so much. And how can we help more? I know we should stop rubbish we create. But is there anything we can do as an individual?
Well, it's a difficult one because at the end of the day, you've overpopulated.
Yes.
So you kind of have to take a sweeping view of, as humanity, what can you do? Well, There's too many of you. You're using too many resources. You're being greedy and you're not sharing what you are taking.
Yes.
So on an individual level, though, how do you translate that into life? That's quite hard.
Mm.
On an individual level, I would say local.
Yes.
Fresh. Immediate. Be more sustainable within where you are standing.
Yeah.
You are designed as a pack animal. That's part of the human thing. You are pack orientated. You are location orientated. And actually, if you lived within the sustainability of your local area, you would have a huge impact on the rest of the world. So there are two different problems here. There are individuals needing to live more in ecological sync with where they are. And then there is the global overview of needing to be less greedy and sharing what you already have better. So those two things seem to be at odds with each other. But because there are so many of you, I mean, nearly 8 billion now, it has to be a two-pronged approach.
Yeah.
So on an individual level, ask, do I need this? Do I need to take yet another resource from Mother Earth? Am I using more than I need? Am I using everything I have to its maximum? So if you keep buying commodities, if you keep running the tap and not caring because you think water is limitless, that is a simple change of mindset that you can make straight away that affects how you live. Resources are not limitless. Water is not limitless. And if you just remember that, you will very subtly start to behave differently, and that will have an impact.
Thank you. We've one last question.
Good. Hopefully not about death.
No.
Good.
How are guides picked and how are they chosen for the medium, or is that a dual thing, a contract between the person and a guide?
Okay, so you have to differentiate between personal guides and working guides.
Yeah.
So all guides are pre-arranged before the soul is born.
Yeah.
So all guides that are going to be with you for any length of time, so the ones from birth to death and working guides, will be pre-arranged. And that will then be the spirit being that you belong to, working out what it wants to do and choosing then who is the best fit based on previous experience, theirs, not yours, and the goals, the targets, the what you're trying to do. So all of the long-term guides are pre-arranged. The ones that come and go throughout your life because they are lesson specific, they aren't always pre-arranged. Sometimes there is almost, if you like, a short list.
Yes.
And it's then who's available or who best suits how the lesson has actually presented itself. So there's a bit more to-ing and fro-ing and negotiating and sizing things up, if you like, for the ones that are lesson specific, and they tend to come and go throughout your life.
Yeah, that's very interesting. We have almost run to the end of the show. It's been fantastic, as always, to speak to you and to hear those wonderful answers and explanations. If you have a few words of wisdom for those listening and that will listen, what would your advices be?
Well, we have entered now into the Chinese year of the rat.
Yes.
And I'd like to finish with a few notes about rat.
Yes.
See, rats are tenacious. Rats can overcome anything, but they can be very single-minded.
Yes.
So be aware that this year is a year that you can overcome obstacles, but you can also be very blinkered about things. And you have to find the balance between those two things. Overcoming your challenges, but still being aware that there are other people involved and consequences. Not becoming so narrow in your vision that you forget others are involved.
Yeah.
So rat is a force for change, but he can be a little bit blinded by his own drive for survival.
Right.
Rat is also very family orientated and wants to look after and protect family. So it's a good year to look into your families. Are there divisions? Are there separations and splits? Is this perhaps a year to consider healing them?
Yeah.
Rat can help with that. So enjoy Rat. It's not an easy year. This is a tough year. But a lot can get done in a Rat year.
Fantastic. I would like to thank you and Sarah as well. It's always fantastic and always interesting, and it's just